Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is our fall pledge drive. More on that coming up.
Coming home from Vietnam was close to as traumatic as the war itself. For years, nobody talked about Vietnam. We were friends with a young couple, and it was only after 12 years that the two wives were talking. Found out that we both had been Marines in Vietnam. Never said a word about it. Never mentioned it. And the whole country was like that.
Those are the words of Marine veteran Carl Marlantis talking about his experience returning home from the Vietnam War in 1969. It's from the first segment of the 10-part, 18-hour documentary film series, The Vietnam War, which premieres on Sunday at 8 p.m. on WOSU-TV. Joining us now are the filmmakers, longtime collaborators on numerous award-winning PBS documentaries, including The Civil War, Baseball, and Prohibition, Ken Burns and Lynn Novick. Welcome back, Ken.
Thank you, Ann.
Welcome back, Lynn.
Thank you so much.
How did you decide, Ken, that now was the time to talk about it?
Well, it's funny. We've spent more than 10 years on this project, so it's sort of how did I decide that the end of 2006 was the time to talk about it? Lynn and I were finishing with a big series on the history of the Second World War called The War that was going to be broadcast and was broadcast in the fall of 2007. And as we could see the light at the end of that tunnel filmically, I turned to Lynn and said, you know, we have to do Vietnam, something we'd talked about intellectually, sort of abstractly, but hadn't really realized that we had to invest emotionally as well in what telling that story would mean to us over the next decade of our lives. And she said, what part? And I said, all of it. And we sort of both looked at each other, took a big, you know, sigh and a gulp. And now, 10 years plus later, the fruits of this work is about to be broadcast. We're very excited, but also very sad to be leaving our baby.
Yeah. Lynn Novick, the big difference between the war and the Vietnam War is that a lot of the people you talk to are so much younger. And that, how much did that play into it? I mean, what did you learn from producing The War that changed the trajectory of this project?
Yeah, you know, I think because we spent so much time in our work on the Second World War talking to veterans, combat veterans, about what it was like to be in the front lines where the killing and the dying are taking place and seeing how that had affected them for the rest of their lives. And yes, they were in their 70s and 80s when we spoke with them. I think it helped us just relate to what this experience is like because we haven't been in combat. So that was a huge help. But we're really interested in the human experience of the Vietnam War from every angle. And so we focused in this film not just on combat veterans, but on people who protested the war, people who had families that were divided by the war, people who went to Canada because they didn't want to serve, journalists who covered it, and many, many veterans as well. And then we also went to Vietnam multiple times to find people on the other side of the war, because too often when Americans speak about the Vietnam War, we're speaking about ourselves, and we didn't think we could understand this extraordinarily important event in our history if we didn't try to examine what it was like from the other side of this experience. So this, the World War II film was sort of going to kindergarten compared to getting a PhD in this Vietnam series. It was exponentially more complex to tackle.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. This is our fall membership drive, and support from listeners like you is the foundation of our budget. Please make your gift right now at WOSU.org or by calling 1-866-897-9678. For $13 a month as a sustainer or a one-time gift of $156, we will send you the Vietnam War set on DVD or Blu-ray. Make a gift of $25 a month as a sustainer or a one-time gift of $300, and you will get the DVDs or Blu-ray discs, plus the book, The Vietnam War, An Intimate History. You can own this epic 10-part, 18-hour documentary series for your own collection, and you will be supporting WOSU Public Media with your gift today. That's $13 a month as a sustainer, withdrawn from your checking account or charged to your credit card for the DVD set or the Blu-ray set, or $25 a month for the combo package that includes the DVDs and the book written by Ken Burns and Jeffrey C. Ward. Go to WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678. 877-897-9678. Lynn Novick, did anyone not want to talk about it?
There are plenty of people who don't want to speak about what undeniably would have been an extraordinarily painful and difficult experience. But we had the very happy experience of finding many people who were willing to really, truly bear their souls to us, both in the United States and in Vietnam. And it seems, you know, that time has passed, and there are many people who've been through this wrenching time in our history and want to talk about it and explain to their children and grandchildren what they went through, what our country went through, what it was like, and hope that we can learn some lessons from it. So Ken and I just feel humbled and sort of awed by the courage of people who told us their stories.
The amount and variety of footage, Ken, in the documentary is remarkable. And I just saw the preview piece that's coming from someone who grew up watching the war on the evening news. How did you pare it to just 18 hours? And 18 hours sounds like a lot to people, but when I just watched the first hour, Ken, it's just like, wow.
Yeah, thank you. And, you know, it is for us a big detective work in so many ways, as Lynn is suggesting, with regard to finding the individuals we're going to talk to, the range of individuals, so that we can put our arm around a broad set of human experiences that at least several of them will be recognizable to almost everyone who watches the film. That was our intention. But with regard to archival research, we tend to think of making a film as additive, and of course it is. You're building a story. But at the same time, it's subtractive. We've got 40 or 50 times the amount of footage, you know, thousands of hours of footage and hundreds of hours of interview transcripts and tens of thousands of still photographs, which we've culled from archives all around the world. And our advantage is, rather than trying to do this on the cheap, sort of quick and dirty and very fast, as a good number of productions often have to be because of the financial exigencies, we were permitted this deep dive. And that means not only into the scholarship and working with those scholars, they may not appear on film by our design and choice and insistence, but they're going to help us at every juncture of our process, as did veterans with a broad range of experiences. But we could go to those archives and spend years cultivating relationships, asking questions of that piece of footage. What was the original camera roll? Where did it come from? Is there more? Can we see the outtakes? And we were very pleased when representatives of the three major networks that represented a significant source for the footage, the CBS, the ABC, and NBC, were just stunned at the way in which we had not only integrated their footage and their competitors' footage, but the way in which we had done it in a kind of seamless fashion that we think at times is the most immersive filmmaking that we've been able to create. That's a huge testament to the extraordinary editors we've worked with for decades, their sensitivity to the footage, and the ability with sound effects and music to bring these moments alive, and rather than have them sort of be held at arm's length. And we're very proud of the fact. I mean, it is at times difficult to watch, but it's not too difficult. And we've spent the last year sharing the footage with people, and they've all said, you know, that one part was tough, but I need to stay with it. I need to know more about this story.
Yeah, I wonder. Go ahead, Lynn.
I just wanted to add, because something that will, I think, be of great interest to your listeners in particular, one of the scenes in the film where we found footage that really hasn't seen the light of day since it was recorded was our scene about the tragedy at Kent State.
Yeah.
We were able to find a family of a student who had taken home movies, had a camera that day, and filmed a lot of what happened in this extraordinarily painful and devastating event. And our producer, Mike Welt, tracked down the family, and we were able to get them to send us the rolls of film that had been put in a box in the garage, because it was such a painful experience for this young man. He never wanted to look at it again. And they let us see the footage and remaster it and put it into the film. And so, for our editor, working with this material was extraordinarily wrenching. But she did a magnificent job to bring this story to life in a way that we've never seen it before. And I know it will be a particular resonance for many of your listeners.
I read a description that really resonated with me after, again, just watching that first hour preview, and that was a sort of a 360-degree view of so many things.
Yes, that's right. Right. Well, I think that, you know, for many Americans, Vietnam is unfinished business. It's unfinished business because it didn't turn out well. So many of us just buried our head in the sand and sort of ignored it, hoping it might go away. Of course, it won't go away. Many of the divisions that we experience today, the hyper-partisanship that none of us like, had the seed sown of that division during Vietnam War. A lot of people had to adopt, for defensive reasons, understandably defensive reasons, kind of set positions, which the new scholarship and actual facts often belie or contradict or at least expand upon. And so we really realized that in order to bring everybody into our tent, and we have no political agenda, we have no axe to grind, we wanted to create a space in which all the perspectives were honored, that we could understand that there was always more than one truth, particularly in war, and that we could both celebrate and bear witness to all those perspectives and not make anybody wrong. And so you'll hear people who probably, I imagine, if we push them, would say we should still be there fighting the communists, and other people who knew from the beginning that this was a mistake. But more importantly, all the intense shades of gray in between. And what's so interesting in this film about a war in which we're always dealing with conflicts between nations, between armies, that very often the conflicts are within individuals. And so as you meet the several dozen people you get to know intimately in this film, mm-hmm. on camera, they themselves undergo incredible battles and incredible wars within themselves as they wrestle with their conscience, as they wrestle with their experiences, as they come home from the war and begin to wrestle with what they saw and what they did and now what they're beginning to believe. And so we really do feel, particularly as Lynn was suggesting, that the addition of the Vietnamese voices, South Vietnamese soldiers and civilians, North Vietnamese soldiers and civilians, Viet Cong guerrillas, that you can get a full and dimensional portrait, a fuller and more dimensional portrait that may at times give you a sense of 360. Certainly it's exhilarating, I think, in some of the battles that we cover, some of the battles that Americans should know about but have forgotten, that we're able to, say, for example, have a Viet Cong guerrilla shooting through the hedgerow at a South Vietnamese Marine, and we're interviewing him as well, mm-hmm. and his Marine advisor from the United States. And so all of a sudden, a battle comes vividly to life because you have three different people in two different languages talking about the same event. And that can be thrilling when you're trying to will old footage and old photographs to life.
That's Ken Burns, longtime documentary filmmaker of numerous award-winning documentaries, including The Civil War, Baseball, and Prohibition. And also with us, Lynn Novick, his longtime collaborator on those same films. They are collaborated again on an epic 18-hour, 10-part a series on the Vietnam War entitled The Vietnam War. It airs or it premieres this Sunday. For more information, check out the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Locally run and locally programmed, 89.7 NPR News exists to make sure that everyone in our wonderful corner of Ohio has access to vital news and information. This is the sort of program that we would try to put together in any event. We're doing it this week during our fall membership drive, and we're so pleased to have Lynn and Ken with us for this ride. With locally focused programs like All Sides with Ann Fisher, 89.7 NPR News addresses issues that impact our community at local, regional, and national levels. It's valuable radio, but it relies on your donations to keep it on the air. So please give now at WOSU.org or by phone at 1-866-897-9678. Thanks to Michael Sharvin in Columbus and also Fiala Freestad in Worthington for your support. Appreciate you taking the time. Just real quickly, if you're listening, show your support today, check out the opportunities to get the 10-part series, the 18-hour 10-part The Vietnam War film series that premieres this Sunday at two different levels, at $13 a month or at $25 a month. So check that out. 1-866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. There is a moment, and I don't know which of you to ask about this, so just chime in, but there's a moment in the first segment that really caught my breath when you reversed a montage of video images with the suggestion of putting Vietnam behind us. And it could have come across as gimmicky, but it did nothing of the sort. How do you decide on a detail like that?
Well, very early on in the editing process, I had sort of been thinking about this and the idea that we are really imprisoned, almost all of us, by the superficiality and the conventionalness of the wisdom we have. Some of it has been upended by new scholarship. And I think Lynn and I began to talk and use the language almost of psychology, that we had to unpack the experience of Vietnam. And for me, that suggested the possibility of running the more familiar images in reverse, back from the, you know, the helicopters being pushed off the deck of the aircraft carriers out in the South China Sea to a French soldier walking backwards through a rice paddy. And then what we wanted to do was repack it in the new context that we feel we're uniquely prepared to do for the rest of the 18 hours. And so you will see all of those images running in their correct direction. Mm-hmm. But it was a way of sort of saying, let's unspool this. Let's unreel this. Let's sort of forget what we think we know, the familiar images, the napalm girl, the helicopters flying, the bombs being dropped, the president's talking all the way from Nick Kissinger and Nixon back through Johnson and McNamara and Kennedy and Eisenhower and Truman. And then you see de Gaulle briefly as the leader of the French trying to reinstate their colony after World War II. And then let's slowly rebuild the story in a way that does not exclude anyone, but adds everyone's story, or at least representations of everyone's story, into this complicated brew and mix. And so I think it's a kind of a resting way to begin to say, we think we've got a different story to tell. Would you please give us the supreme honor of donating your attention to the work we've spent the last decade doing?
You know, our hope, I mean, it has a way, we hope, of sort of getting people out of their comfort zone of thinking they know, as we did when we started the project, oh, we know a lot about this. In fact, we knew almost nothing. And we had to learn from the beginning, as Ken was saying. And our hope is, and we've seen this at screenings that we've had and events around the country, that when people see the film and hear the testimony of the people who lived through it and with their inner conflicts and surprising revelations and hear the president speaking privately about what they really think about what is happening in the war, it sort of opens up the possibility for a different kind of conversation about this really traumatic and tragic event in our history and in the history of Vietnam. And we've seen it happen time after time. We've seen people who protested the war apologizing to veterans who served. We've seen veterans talk about their doubts about whether it was a worthwhile effort. We've seen just a different level of conversation and a more civil conversation. And the backwards montage seems to sort of just set the tone from the beginning. This is a different, we're doing something different here.
I started college in 1975, and I think one of the first classes I signed up for that I could, as soon as I could, was 20th century American history. And I did it solely to learn more about the Vietnam War. And of course, the professor, as they were wont to do at that time, it was so soon, they spent about 20 minutes on it. And I was starving for information because I sort of grew up on it like you guys did, but just by watching TV. And I'm wondering how did making this documentary affect your point of view, Lynn Novick?
Wow. Well, you know, I'm not sure I really had a point of view to begin. I think I understood that the war was tragic and long and controversial and bitter and that people were very upset. And I didn't really understand why. I'd read a lot about it, but I still didn't have that kind of access point. So I think, you know, getting to know the people who lived through it and seeing how viscerally meaningful this experience was for them, people got emotional within a few minutes of sitting down in front of the camera. Mm-hmm. People had very strong feelings. People had conflicted feelings, as Ken was saying. I just began to understand, and I think I'm speaking for everybody on our team, how deeply complicated this event was and how little resolution we had had about it and how we felt this hunger. You know, among our veterans, they would come to screenings and say, wow, you know, I knew my part of the war where I was. I didn't know what was happening in Hanoi. I didn't know what was happening in Washington, D.C. I didn't know what was happening in my hometown or even in my own family. And there was this sense of, you know, we know these little pieces of the puzzle, and there's a hunger for putting it all together into one coherent story, and that's what we've tried to do.
Ken Burns?
Yeah, I think for me, there is a kind of accumulated understanding that human nature is never going to avoid wars, that this is part of our nature. I'm sorry to say, we would wish for a quicker evolution. And in the three wars that I've intensely studied, the Civil War, the Second World War, and now the Vietnam War, one could default to a kind of pessimistic view about it. But what's so interesting, even in a war which seems to have so little redeeming value, that there seems to be lots of daylight there to see and appreciate in the extraordinary bravery and courage of so-called ordinary people to confront the realities of this war. And this is bravery and courage that more often than not occurs on the battlefield, but not exclusively on the battlefield. That's courage and bravery that is often in a decision to resist the war. And we found in the embracing of that multiple perspectives, permitting the different and opposing views to coexist without kind of rancor and the poisonous discourse that we experience today, that it may be possible to help in that as we go forward as a country. Our genius is for compromise. Our genius is for community and understanding that we are so much stronger when we work together. We feel ourselves in a kind of lonely free agency now and yearn for the kind of community that restores a kind of hopeful vision of an American future. And paradoxically, one of the most divisive moments in American history, the Vietnam War, perhaps the most divisive moment since the Civil War, provides us with an opportunity to maybe arrest the trend towards the disunion that we see all around us, the hyper-partisanship that poisons our conversations and may help us return to this kind of civil conversations. And so we would just say, please watch it and then talk about it. We're not interested in the national conversation that people always talk about. That doesn't happen. But individually, you can accumulate a national conversations when fathers and sons start to say, Dad, what happened? What did you do there? Or daughters say to grandmothers, I understand you went to a protest. Why did you do that? Why were you against the war? And here, as our veterans have told us over and over again, how important it was to hear from their counterparts in the Viet Cong and the North Vietnamese Army, who sound remarkably like our Army and Marines, talking about the experience of war at the granular gut level where the killing and the dying occurs. And we just hope that we could emerge from it perhaps a little bit stronger as a people, and remembering more that the things that we do to work towards each other rather than away from each other serve not only our own lives and our own individual happiness, but the pursuit of happiness of our fellow citizens.
You know, I only have about less than a minute with you guys, and I just want to say thank you so much for joining us today, and ask you in parting as I move on to, ask people for their support for 89.7 NPR News, is why PBS? Why do you keep going back?
You know, Ann, I could not have made this film. Lynn and I could not have made this film, nor indeed any of the films we've made, in any other place but public media. People just aren't going to permit us. There's no business model to permit us to spend the millions of dollars we did and the more than a decade it took to do this. And we accept that, just as, you know, you're not calling the marketplace when your house is on fire at 3 a.m. We don't have the marketplace on the ground in Afghanistan right now. And while I wouldn't suggest that public broadcasting has anything to do with the defense of the country, I just think it helps make our country worth defending by having something that's willing to permit a kind of extra marketplace exploration of complex issues that might in the end bring us together.
Well, thank you, Ken Burns, so much for joining us today. I appreciate your time, and congratulations on an amazing, once again, another amazing documentary series.
Thank you so much, Anne.
That's Ken Burns. And also Lynn Novick, thanks to you as well. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
It's Ken Burns and Lynn Novick. They are collaborators in the new 10-part, 18-hour documentary film series directed by them both. It premieres Sunday on WOSU-TV at 8 p.m. Coming up, we're going to hear from one of the voices in that series. But first, I got to take the time to ask you, first of all, thanks to Maria Costa and Columbus for your support. Remember, this is 89.7 NPR News Membership Drive, and our guests this hour, Ken Burns and Lynn Novick. You know, their newest documentary series, The Vietnam War, a 10-part, 18-hour series, airs on WOSU beginning on Sunday. You can have this series for your home collection as a thank you gift this hour. 10 years in the making, the series includes rarely seen, digitally remastered archival footage from sources around the globe. This is an epic documentary and something you will only find thanks to public broadcasting, and Ken Burns eloquently explained why that is. For $13 a month as a sustainer or a one-time gift of $156, get the Ken Burns Vietnam DVD set or Blu-ray set. For $25 a month as a sustainer or a one-time gift of $156, I'm sorry, $300, that's not right. It would be a one-time gift of $25 a month as a sustainer or a one-time gift of $300-something. You get the DVD or the Blu-ray set, plus the hardback book, The Vietnam War, An Intimate History, written by Ken Burns and Jeffrey Ward. These two thank you gift levels will help support the shows you see on WOSU-TV and the shows you love here on 89.7 NPR News. Support All Sides with Ann Fisher this hour and get these great thank you gifts and have access to this amazing documentary experience. This series explores the human dimensions of the war through the testimony of nearly 80 witnesses from all sides. Make a gift of $13 a month or $25 a month right now. Visit WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678. I know you want to listen to the rest of the program. I want you to listen to the rest of the program. It'll only take a few minutes to make that call. 1-866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. Right now, I want to welcome. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher.
We burned down a whole lot of hooches today of these people who don't cooperate with us, you know. Yeah, I don't really understand it, because if they are, you know, not VC, and we do that to them, you know, treat them bad, then they're going to turn VC. The Army does everything backwards.
Michael Holmes was drafted to serve in the Vietnam War. That recording is from a series of tapes he and his family used to correspond between the war and his home in Missouri. Here's a cut from his family.
Michael, this is Mother. The picture you sent us was real good. It looked just like you. I even liked that mustache, and I didn't think I would. You know, we miss you a lot.
This is your dad talking. We think that you'll be okay. Just don't be nosing around where you don't have any business and get hold of a booby trap or something. It's about the end of this tape, so goodbye for now.
Michael Holmes was later killed by a North Vietnamese soldier while out on patrol. Both amazing cuts are included in the 10-part documentary film series, The Vietnam War. Again, it premieres on Sunday. For more information, check out the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. We just concluded a conversation with the award-winning filmmakers behind this 10-part series, Ken Burns and Lynn Novick. Joining us now is Vietnam War veteran and Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Philip Caputo. His remarkable memoir, A Rumor of War, is now available in a 40th anniversary edition. Philip Caputo joins us by phone. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for inviting me on.
You are featured prominently in the documentary. You wrote your memoir relatively soon after the war ended. In fact, when I was reading about how you wrote it and what how that came about, I thought about I was just couple years into college, and I can remember what I was doing back then. It was published in 1977, but it really stands the test of time in syntax and context. How did writing about the war so soon after it affect you at the time?
Well, let me point out that I wrote the book over a span of about 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
When it was published, it was the product of a lot of effort. It's difficult to express what it was like writing about it because I felt as if I were under some kind of compulsion, almost as if I didn't really have any choice except to write it. I know that I had to dig very deep, both into my memories and then into some of the written records I had, which consisted of letters to my parents, as well as a rather sketchy diary or journal I had kept over there, to recreate the war as I experienced it in such a way that someone reading the book would experience it at least as much as possible as you could do on a page, a printed page.
One of the most haunting aspects of your book is how you introduce us to characters from your experiences, and they are as big as life, and you follow up with something like 6 months later, he was paralyzed from the neck down, or 2 weeks later, he was shot dead while on patrol. That was a recurring sort of approach to these incredibly vivid characters. It kind of shook me up a lot reading it.
Yeah, I don't know that I did that consciously, but I found that when it was done, that was more effective than creating the characters as you might say you would do in a novel. That I would introduce them and then rather quickly just drop in that something dreadful had happened to them, either paralyzed from the waist down or killed in an ambush, that communicated the arbitrariness of the way death comes in war, the randomness of it, and I might even add the kind of the indifference of it. Somebody could be just full of life, certainly a worthy human being, and then in an instant they're snuffed out of existence.
Yeah. You enlisted and became a platoon commander in the first combat unit sent to fight in Vietnam. You landed at Da Nang on March 8th, 1965. How much did you know about what was going on when you arrived?
Zero. And that was probably true of most of us. I meant, when I say zero, I meant the totality of what was going on in Vietnam. We, of course, were briefed about the tactical situation that we were at first facing, which was largely a defensive operation for the first 2 or 3 months, in which our mission was simply to defend the Da Nang airfield from an attack by the Viet Cong or the North Vietnamese. But beyond that, a lot of us weren't even quite sure in those days where Vietnam was, much less what it was like there and the entire history of the war going back to the experience of the French Indochina War. We were ignorant, and I might say that ignorance seemed to have spread all the way up to the White House in those days.
You are listening to 89.7 NPR News. It's listener-supported. All Sides with Ann Fisher. Support the conversations we bring you every day. We work hard to bring you interesting people, and our conversations are in-depth. Many times we talk to a guest for an entire hour. You only find that on public radio. Support 89.7 NPR News at WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678. Give at whatever level works for your budget. But if you care about the conversation we're having today right now with Pulitzer Prize winning journalist and author of A Rumor of War, Philip Caputo, then give us a call. Take the time. It'll only take a couple minutes. You can go online and do the same thing, just a few minutes, and give it whatever level works. But at $13 a month, get the Vietnam War documentary series on DVD or Blu-ray. You can also make a one-time gift of $156. Learn more about the DVD set at WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678. If $25 a month fits into your budget and this is an important topic for you, you'll get the documentary series on DVD or Blu-ray, and you'll get the book, The Vietnam War, An Intimate History, written by Ken Burns and Jeffrey C. Ward. This is a hardcover book that is the perfect companion to the documentary series. Visit WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. Make that show of support right now. This is a special program we've planned, but we would have done it anyways. This is the sort of thing we try to produce for you every single day. So show your support, 1-866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. Again, my guest is Philip Caputo. He's author of the book, the prized book. It's called A Rumor of War. It's in its 40th year. There's a new special edition out. Philip, you wrote that at times the comradeship that was the war's only redeeming quality caused some of its worst crimes. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, it's one of the ambiguities of war that I try to get across in the Rumor of War. A lot of times, when you're in an infantry outfit, that is the war to you. Just basically what you see in front of you and who is alongside you, and you form extremely close relationships with the men that are fighting alongside you. That are probably, as I've described it in the book, maybe closer than a man and a woman in a marriage or brothers in a family. And when one of them is killed or maimed, it excites a desire for vengeance in you. And you attempt to, so to speak, even the score. That's not a rational response, I'll admit, but then again, war is not exactly what I would call a rational endeavor. So that what would happen is that your buddy would get killed, and then you'd want to kill one of the enemy, just as I say, to even up the score.
And that's part of what you were trained to do, right, from reading about your boot camp and your training?
Well, you weren't trained to take vengeance, no. But you were certainly trained to kill people. That's really what the object of the infantry is. By the way they phrase it in the official manuals is that the mission of the infantry soldier is to close with and destroy the enemy by fire and close combat. But that is not the same thing as taking revenge. That's something that arises within yourself.
Thanks to Joe Terser in Dublin for your support, and also Gary Bros in Grove City for your support as well. If you want to pick up the phone right now and show your support, 1-866-897-9678. I promise it only takes a couple minutes, or you can just go online while you're listening to WOSU.org and tell us that this is something that matters to you, these very conversations that we're having today. You end chapter 4 of your book on an uneasy note, recalling the instructions for the rules of engagement. Do not fire at Vietnamese unless they are running. And there was consternation about that. It's like, well, wait a minute. They could be South Vietnamese. How will we know? And they said it really didn't matter.
Yeah, the difficulty of that war, and maybe even wars like the ones we're having in Afghanistan as well as in Iraq, or that we had in Iraq, is that you're, first of all, never sure who the enemy is, because the war is an insurgency. It's also a civil war between, in the case of Vietnam, between North and South Vietnam. And the strategy, if I can call it that, of the American military was a war of attrition, which, and to phrase it brutally, it was, is that you kill more of them, way more of them, than they can kill of you, and eventually they will cry uncle and surrender or negotiate, whatever the object may be. And going back to the problem of identifying who the enemy is, so that you don't know. A lot of times they weren't wearing official uniforms, so they would say that the Vietnamese is running. Then that means that there's some confession, if you will, of guilt or membership in the Viet Cong, and that makes that person a legitimate target. Again, using a brutal phrase was, and it was not something we thought up down in the ranks, but something that came down to us from up above is that if it's dead and it's Vietnamese, it is VC.
My guest is Philip Caputo. He's Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and author of the book A Rumor of War, first published in 1977. It's in its 40th anniversary edition now. Philip Caputo is featured prominently in the new 10-part, 18-hour documentary film series directed by Ken Burns and Lynn Novick. It premieres this Sunday on WOSU-TV at 8 p.m. If this is a conversation that matters to you, on All Sides with Ann Fisher, then now is the time to show your support. 1-866-897-9678 during this our fall membership drive. You can also go online to WOSU.org. The Vietnam War tells the epic story of one of the most consequential, divisive, and controversial events in American history as it has never been told on film. For $13 a month as a sustainer, you can own the complete DVD set or the set on Blu-ray discs. That's $13 a month or a one-time gift of $156. These thank you gifts will ship right after the series premiere on WOSU-TV this Sunday. So go to WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678. I can promise you this is well worth the support that you'll be showing 89.7 NPR News. You can also make a gift of $25 a month and get the documentary series on DVD or Blu-ray. And you get the book, The Vietnam War, An Intimate History, written by Ken Burns and Jeffrey Ward. The book plunges us into the chaos and intensity of combat. It even explains the rationale that got us into Vietnam and kept us there for so very many years. This book has amazing photographs as well. Visit WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678. We have about 13 minutes left, so let's get 10 more calls in 13 minutes. I know we can. I know you're out there listening. I know you care. Now is the time to show support. 1-866-897-9678. Let's get 10 more calls in 13 minutes. And let me just spend some time interviewing Philip Caputo while you do your job of getting on the line right now, 1-866-897-9678, or go to WOSU.org and show your support right now so I can focus on my conversation with Philip Caputo. Janet in New Albany, you're on the air. Hi, Janet.
Hi, Ann. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
I want to thank Mr. Burns and Mr. Caputo for all of their hard work. My brother was Jack Wheeler. He was one of the three guys who founded the Vietnam Veterans Memorial. You probably know a bit about that story, but I wanted to urge everyone, after reading the book and seeing this incredible documentary, to visit the local memorial in and around Central Ohio. I know there are several, but on November 11th, I think it's important for everyone to go and contemplate and thank all of these young men and women who were willing to die for us.
Thank you, Janet. Appreciate it. Take care. Thanks for your call. Philip Caputo, why did you enlist in the first place? You were a classics major at a university, right?
Yeah, I was. I enlisted in what would be the Marine Corps version of ROTC. It really consisted of 12 weeks of officers' candidate school at Quantico, Virginia. And that was in 1963, actually before we became actively involved with our own troops in Vietnam. I enlisted mainly because I grew up in the post-World War II era. Most of my relatives fought or served, at least, during World War II, and the draft was on. So if you were a physically fit male between the ages of 19 and 26, you were almost certain to get drafted. And I do remember that one of my uncles, who was at the Battle of Tarawa in 1943, he had told me, he says, well, he says, try to get to be an officer. He said, it's better than being an enlisted man. And so I signed up for OCS in, as I said, in 1963, and went in because you had to fulfill your military obligation. In other words, my motives were purely pragmatic, and as well as patriotic, in the sense that it was just a given in that era that you had to serve your country in some way. Usually, it was by either going into the military or even in the Peace Corps. But you had to serve your country in some capacity or another. And so those two motives, the pragmatic one being is that I probably couldn't have gotten a job right out of college, because the first thing a human resources director would ask me says, have you fulfilled your military obligation yet? Mm-hmm. That was a standard question. And if you said no, they'd say, well, once you do, then come see us.
Wow. What was it like when you did get out?
When I got out of the service, you mean?
Yes.
Well, it was things had changed dramatically in a relatively short time. I was discharged in 1968, and I remember that the country, or at least a large segment of the country, had turned bitterly against the war, and unfortunately, a lot of us who fought in it were blamed for it.
Mm-hmm.
It was the old saying, that's now become a cliche, that the warriors were blamed for the war. And we encountered a fair amount of animosity when we came back, to a point that I had friends who wouldn't even admit that they had been to Vietnam. And although I admitted to it, I never particularly called attention to it.
Yeah, we played a cut from the documentary at the beginning of the program from a Marine who said that he went 12 years as close friends with another couple, he and his wife, and that it was 12 years before he and the other guy got around to the conversation of they were both Marines in Vietnam. Was that typical?
I couldn't tell you how typical it was, except to say that it was not atypical.
Mm-hmm.
It happened a lot. The person I just mentioned was a mathematics teacher in New England, in Massachusetts, and he would not admit to the rest of the faculty, nor to the school administration, the college administration, that he had been a Marine in Vietnam, literally for fear that he would have been fired, because most of the animosity against the war was centered on college campuses, and liberal professors, and I guess we'd call them progressive now. So he was actually afraid he would lose his job. And a lot of guys just kept quiet about it. I guess my way of talking about it was to write a rumor of war, because as I state in the afterword to the book, my purpose in that book, to repeat what I said earlier, was to recreate the war in such a way that someone who was not there could get a sense of what it was like to have fought there. And once they did that, to then look themselves in the mirror, look into their own hearts and say, well, what do I think now? What's my opinion now? How would I have behaved, or how would I have acted under those same circumstances? And again, that was my way of talking about it.
At the end of chapter 6, you wrote about the process of learning to hate. And at the time, you're recalling the destruction of a hamlet, and I might mispronounce this, Jiao Tree, for 3. You wrote that you hardened your heart against one woman's cries, and that whole idea of learning to hate, is that every war?
Oh, I'm rather sure that it is.
Yeah.
I haven't fought in every war, but I was a war correspondent afterward for the Chicago Tribune, and mm-hmm. covered quite a few conflicts all over the world, including the fall of Saigon, and you see that emotion in everybody who is in combat. I know the histories I've read of World War II and of Korea, as well as other conflicts, that kind of hatred, in effect, dehumanizing the enemy, or even dehumanizing civilians, many of whom die as what I've euphemistically called collateral damage.
Mm-hmm.
You would probably lose your mind if you felt for every person that died in the war, not only your friends, but people that you killed or participated in their killing, or looking at dead or injured civilians. You just have to put this flak jacket over your heart, or I think that you would probably go crazy. And there were some guys who did.
Philip Caputo, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
Well, I appreciated the interview. Thank you very much.
Philip Caputo is Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and author of A Rumor of War, first published in 1977. He's a prominent voice in the upcoming 10-part, 18-hour documentary film series directed by Ken Burns and Lynn Novick. It premieres this Sunday on WOSU-TV at 8 p.m. It's entitled The Vietnam War. You're not going to want to miss it. Highly recommend Philip Caputo's book as well, A Rumor of War. Fantastic look inside one man's experience in the Vietnam War. Thanks to Walter and Lori McHenry in Worthington for your support. Just about 3 minutes left now, and let's get more calls, please. If this is the sort of broadcasting, if this is the sort of interviews, the sort of topics that you care about, that you learn from, that help you grow, then show your support right now. 1-866-897-9678, or go online to WOSU.org. Remember, it's listener-supported 89.7 NPR News. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The Vietnam War tells the epic story of one of the most consequential, divisive, and controversial events in American history, as it has never been told on film. For $13 a month as a sustainer, you can own the complete DVD set or the set on Blu-ray discs. That's $13 a month or a one-time gift of $156. These thank you gifts will ship right after the series premiere on WOSU-TV, which is on September 17th. Go to WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. You're listening to WOSU and HD1. This is listener-supported 89.7 NPR News. You can go online to WOSU.org and check out what we offer as thank you gifts. I highly recommend making a gift of $25 a month as a sustainer or a one-time gift of $300. You'll get the DVDs or Blu-ray discs, plus the book, The Vietnam War, An Intimate History. Go to WOSU.org or to go to 1-866-897-9678. 10 years in the making, the Vietnam War series includes rarely seen, digitally remastered archival footage from sources around the globe, photographs taken by some of the most celebrated photojournalists journalists of the 20th century, historic television broadcasts, evocative home movies, and secret audio recordings from inside the Kennedy, Johnson, and Nixon administrations. This type of documentary is only something you're going to see on public media. Show your support right now, 1-866-897-9678, or go online to WOSU.org. And thanks so much for listening.